I'm Wayne.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Stargate Pioneer from the Starling Tribune.
A podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the one you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3,
2,
1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten. Did you just say womp womp? And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 142 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we decide that one program isn't enough, and we should make sure that Gallifreyan representation transcends every TV show, movie, and book we read. Next stop, Political Office.
I'll buy that for $1.
I'm your host, Haley Malley, and with me in the GPR studios this week, we have the one and only Keir Hansen. How are you today, Keir?
It's just me. It's just me.
Just Keir.
Yeah. Jay is still on his hiatus. Just send him words of either encouragement or besmirchment. You can choose whichever one. But this week, we're going to take a look at the surprising number of references and homages and outright tributes to our beloved British science fiction series across the multiple media. It seems to be a trend that is increasing exponentially as the post-2005 revitalized popularity of the program continues to appeal to a global audience. Everything from comic references to TV show name drops or people admitting their fandom, in character or even just mentions on late night talk shows and things of that sort. So it's growing quite a bit, and more so as the show just reaches a wider and wider audience. I'd say more appearances than I was aware of, but maybe that's just because I don't really watch a whole lot of network television.
I watch a ton of television, and I've seen quite a few references.
Okay, yep. Well, I mean, some of the ones that I guess here stateside we'd be most most familiar with are going to be through programs where, as a result of the creators being big fans in their own right, and the shows lending themselves to doing these kind of meta references to other shows, is sort of par for the course. So, the big one that pops into my head is obviously The Simpsons, because Matt Groening is a huge classic Who fan, and he admits that Tom Baker is his doctor and such. So who else makes multiple appearances on the show but Tom Baker, who loves doing a lot of voiceover work, as the, if you've seen ever seen the sketch comedy show Little Britain, he does all the narration, or had done all the narration for that series when it ran, and has done numerous character voiceovers and things too. So, and I guess Futurama as well. I don't think I saw that episode.
I remember seeing Tom Baker's head in mm-hmm. Futurama. I haven't seen as much Simpsons as I have a Futurama, though, so I haven't seen his appearances in The Simpsons.
Okay. Yeah, well, they did scenes where he was at cons, doing signings and things like
okay.
that. Okay. Which is so funny, because he doesn't do that now.
Oh, he doesn't memories. Do that sort of thing.
Right. But the other one that's really big here in the States is the Big Bang Theory, because of the fact that it prides itself in all of the references and name drops and little background tips of the hat that it does to so many different things that the creators are big fans of. So we've had things like, who's the guy who runs the comic shop?
Stuart.
All right. Stuart, often prefers to dress as Whovian characters, or his preferred doctor and that too. But they've had, I want to say, at least a half a dozen or so direct references to the show.
Yes.
Okay.
And then some props floating around the apartment.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I think we'd see more often. If you were really eagle-eyed about it, you'd probably catch a lot of the things where, when you have those kind of sets where you can get away with that sort of thing, getaway, I guess it isn't the right term, but ones where you would expect to see these kind of, you know, kitschy memorabilia in the background, that works out well. I put this on the list just because it is there and it's kind of blatant, but even you take it far enough back, I think you're going back at least about 15 years or so back to when the Rugrats was on Nickelodeon.
More than that, try like 25 years.
Jesus, I'm old. but there was a couple of scenes where as they're going through toy stores and things like that, there would be these rows of toys behind them and there were Daleks on the shelves and it was blatant. I mean, there was no way you could mistake them for anything else. But that was one thing that a number of people caught and thought that was just a kind of a cool little reference there. I know there's been, in keeping with sort of the animated series, I don't recall, just because I never really got into either one of the shows, I wasn't really big on either one of the series, the Family Guy and American Dad references.
I used to watch Family Guy a little bit, not religiously or anything, and I didn't ever watch American Dad, so I haven't seen these ones myself.
Mm. But I guess there's scenes particularly where they will call out to the fact, I know in one of the Family Guy episodes where the daughter is running for a school office in one of these, and part of her political grandstanding is that she has the voice of all of her people, including those nerds who are attached to that 30-year-old sci-fi show, and then you know cuts over to the to the stadium seats, and there's a bunch of kids dressed up as Hartnell and Baker and whatnot, and they're all just, you know, waving their little British flags and such. So without saying so much by name, it's pretty clear. I guess I'm gonna leave off the biggest one here stateside, just because it is of that, it has become just within the last couple of years be such a large scale. But I will tap into one that I personally am kind of attached to. It's not a television reference and it's not a film reference. It's within a video game. I'd say probably maybe last year or year before, I spent a lot of time after some surgery playing Borderlands 2. And really enjoying some of the little incidental scenes and the NPC characters that would just utter kind of odd things in the background and such as you're kind of walking through scenes and stuff. And there were more absolutely hand over fist references to Doctor Who in this than you could count. They were calling it like Constable What? I gotta get back. There's like an NPC that's like walking through the town. He's like, I gotta get back in time for the next episode of Constable What? Android characters that would run around yelling delete, you know, it was just really, really blatant. Your little sidekick, your little robot sidekick would run around every once in a while, and his sign off, he would allons-y before he would run out of the room and kind of thing. So it was dozens of these things. It was a lot of fun for me personally, because as I'm sitting there doped up on whatever it is they had on post-searching, oh, I totally get it. So that
I understood that reference.
Right. What else on the list we've drawn together here? What are some of the other ones that you know you personally have caught?
Castle, definitely. Betcher has a lot of references to a lot of genre shows because of Nathan Fillion mostly.
Yeah.
And all the characters just drop those lines that if you're not in on, you know, Firefly or Doctor Who or whatever they're referencing in that particular episode, you're going to completely miss. Mm. But there are some that are a little more blatant than others. And okay. I think there's a YouTube video that's got some of the more blatant drops in there, but they have a lot of subtle ones as well.
Gotcha. In keeping with the nice little tips in there, as a result of the cast members being intrinsically involved, I was never one for watching the show Leverage. I do know that there in particular was an episode where they went beyond just doing the sort of the subtle things, like you'd have a computer screen where names would be flipping by and all of a sudden you'd see, you know, Jonathan Pertwee or something like that, you know, blip past the screen or what have you. But there was one where there actually was a couple of characters where they had to sort of suss each other out by making sure that they were Whovian enough. And we're kind of grilling one another on how many, you know, Baker episodes they could name and things like that. So it's good to see. And I can't imagine for anyone who was not familiar with it or familiar with the context of what they were talking about, who's probably sitting through this episode thinking, what the hell is going on with these two? Because apparently it went on and on through the episode. But and maybe one will have to seek out if I don't have to actually know anything about the show Leverage, I'm hoping, because I don't plan on getting invested in their show right now.
See, that's one of those shows, to me, it seems like it would be a pure procedural, but I know a lot of sci-fi geeky people who are really into it.
Okay. Is there something about it that lends
itself? I don't know.
Because I don't know a thing about the show, period.
I don't either.
All right.
I know I've seen guys in bulletproof vests in promotional photos. That's about it.
Okay. Let's see, what else have we got on the list here? We've got, this is kind of a sidestep. We might actually share some of the YouTube clips that are out there just to see how it's supported. Apparently, there were two instances in South Park where they made a reference to Doctor Who. One was, well, you're not really sure if it was. They were talking about an android that was a standing upright dog they were calling K-10. but it didn't really bear any real resemblance in any way in its speech or its behavior or anything. So that might have just been the fact where they just played off the obvious, you know, canine kind of naming convention. But then later on, they came up with this megamaniacal robot called the Funnybot, which I think was of Canadian origin, that essentially wanted to exterminate everyone. And it was very Dalek in its behavior. I'll put the clip out there for people to play around with. But that was probably one of the clearest ones for South Park. I personally was able to catch, there was a 3-installment Mr. Bean Christmas special. I think it was broken apart across 3 episodes, I guess you want to call them, or 3 chunks. And in one of them, he decides that he's going to embellish the nativity scene. He didn't have the figures to put a nativity scene together. So he starts grabbing other things, and he ends up putting Daleks in the background where the angels been, or where the shepherds would have been. Apparently, the Daleks decide they are going to take over the nativity. They're going to exterminate baby Jesus. It becomes this whole big mess. But that's what you would expect from British sketch comedy. You'd expect to see that sort of references. And Rowan Atkinson being a huge Doctor Who, that's pretty much a given. The one that I think you have to see to appreciate with a calm mind, because it's pretty cruel to Whovians, is the robot chicken Nerd Boy scene where Nerd Boy meets the Doctor and wants to travel on the TARDIS. It's brutal. Robot Chicken is brutal. They don't pull any punches. But that is one I will definitely link here in the notes, because it's kind of spot on. If it weren't so well done, it would be pretty mean. But it's worth it, I think.
You know, if it's funny enough, we'll accept the cruelty.
Yep. We don't all have speech impediments. Is that the TARDIS? I'm totally prepared. I have my sonic screwdriver ready. So, what else have we got on the list here?
Supernatural, mostly because of the Charlie character that was introduced and then departed from the show recently. Mm. She's a big geek. And so one of the aliases that she used at one point was Amy Pond.
Right. So, I mean, obviously, and I wonder if that was kind of some contribution by Felicia Day in that case.
It must have been.
Because if the Winchester brothers are always grabbing, you know, classic rock icons, and then you bring Felicia Day on and she has to come up with an alias to disguise herself, she's going to grab from nerd culture. Well played with the Amy Pond reference. Now, okay, here's the other one I'm going to throw up to you, because I'm actually really not familiar with this. I remember the Justice League cartoon series, not the League of Super Friends, but the Justice League they did back in
1999, 2000.
Yeah, I was going to say late 2001. 90s.
Yeah.
What is Young Justice?
I haven't seen this one yet. I guess it was a spinoff. I'm assuming it's like all the younger sidekicks and things like that.
Yeah.
So you're probably looking at like Robin and whoever the young sidekicks are besides him.
Yeah, well, I guess in this clip, and I'll try to get the clip out there for you. I think it's either on YouTube or Daily Motion. It has I see a lot of I think it's Hawk Girl actually running around.
I love Hawk Girl. She's awesome. Okay.
But I guess they start referencing the fact that one of their means of getting around is time traveling by way of British police boxes, and it's clearly a TARDIS, to the point where they go in, they close the door, the windows start to glow, and, you know, the camera cuts back to people staring at it, you know, gape mouthed. It's pretty blatant. But just a strange fit for the middle of a DC cartoon series. I was really surprised to find that actually existed. But as far as cartoon series go, then we have, well, you know that Friendship is Magic. And No, I have not seen 5 seconds of this program. I'm going to have to shortly, because I'm actually going to be discussing the topic within a couple of weeks in another cast. But on the My Little Pony series, we had a character originally referred to as Time Turner, had a little hourglass on his haunches or whatever they do with those ponies to identify one from another. And then I guess the character evolved to start being referred to as Dr. Hooves.
Clever. I get it.
Shows up in certain episodes wearing the blue necktie and hair moving dramatically in breezes. Very, very Tennant. So, and I've seen a lot of the little figures at cons and things. I've seen people wearing t-shirts and such, but I have not actually seen the character in motion or speaking well enough to know how tight of a reference this actually is. Other than the obvious, but how really on the nose they try to make it for the sake of this show.
I wouldn't know.
I'm going to know a lot better in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
I'm going to hand this next one over to you, because this is, as much as I adore it, I know that this is one that you're excited about.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. One of my favorite always on television cable movies from my childhood. It's so Doctor Who that I think we should dedicate like an entire arc.
We could recast this thing so that Rufus is the Doctor. Rufus is probably like the 16th Doctor.
Yes.
But yeah, so all right, traveling and around.
He's dropped his standards on companions a little bit.
quite a bit. Blatant disregard for the laws of time.
Right. Who's going to yell at him? The Master. I mean, come on.
Yeah, precisely. Well, that's just thing. Who was it in the second film? What was his name? What was it? Nebulabanos or something. What was the guy's name?
I've seen the other one like once or twice, so I don't remember.
Okay, but he would have been your master in there to muck things up. But yes, the whole idea of abducting historical figures from around time and bring them together to see how they would behave in a modern context. And just their mechanism of travel was pretty blatant there.
Yes.
Didn't have the whole dimensional, trans-dimensional behavior within the phone booth. They had to pack 9 of them in there like it was some sort of college prank.
The bigger on the inside button was broken.
It didn't quite work. But the fact that you had to look up your destination in the phone booth, figure out where you're going to go to punch in your time code. Nice.
Excellent.
And the last one we'll leave on here, just because we think this is something that you need to, I personally think that you need to see how it evolved from just a kind of a loving reference into something that became an animal in and of itself, was the Inspector Spacetime theme through Community. Became massive as a result of fan uprising, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Right. There was just such an amazing positive response to it. And people really fell in love with Troy and Abed's friendship, mm-hmm. as expressed through their cosplaying as Inspector Spacetime. And I can't remember his companion's name. Constable something, I think.
But it was one of the things where it became, it was a bit within the series. And then did they not decide that they were going to go one step farther and start actually doing like...
There was a discussion of maybe doing a web series.
Yeah.
Or a little mini film or something.
Is that not going to happen now? Because I thought
I don't know. I think they were having issues with rights.
Oh, well, really?
I think so.
Okay. I'll do a little background research on that because, the last time we had heard, we got an opportunity actually to meet... a couple of people involved. I sent you out. You when we were out at Galley, we ended up sending you back one of your sign prints from one of the principal animators for that, who did some of the promotional posters for it, or did some of the, I guess they did some graphic novel representation of Inspector Spacetime. So it's definitely not a dead concept. It may be in development hell, but it has not been forgotten. We'll have to see. Yeah, I'm really interested to see whether maybe that's a something. If it is rights, then that's one issue. If it's just a matter of a sort of an ebbing interest, then that smells like a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe kind of a ramp back up.
But one of my favorite parts of that running gag was the American version. Do you remember that?
Vaguely, yes.
They did a focus group about what an American audience would want from an American version of this British show, and it was a train wreck. The inspector should be in a romantic relationship with his companion.
Shit.
And he should be young and sexy. And the companion should be young and sexy.
Wow. Shades of the 96 movie. Well, nonetheless, but we've got some good news on that regard. We'll get to that in the news segment. We did have a little bit of listener feedback on this, though, when we decided to put it out there and say, because, I mean, there obviously a lot of people will jump quickly to the Inspector Spacetime references or the Fourth Doctor appearances in The Simpsons. But Michael from over at Companions of the Doctor actually pointed out a really good reference to us, one that I was never even familiar with. And he nailed this down to the point where he was sending me screenshots and everything through Facebook. There was, if you recall, the Tiny Toon Adventures back in the days of things like... when the Warner Brothers had the whole big ramp back up with the Animaniacs and Freakazoid and all the shows that they had coming back on WB afternoon cartoons, you know, come home from school and you had the whole line of these things. The Tiny Toon Adventures apparently had an episode called A Quack and the Quarks, where there was some thing taken. It was like their take on the Duck Dodgers in the 24th and a half century kind of thing. And there were all of these famous spaceships all docked at this one bay. So there was the USS Enterprise, and there was the craft from Alien, and all these other things. And there was a TARDIS, just a tiny little TARDIS parked there next to all of these other gigantic, space cruisers and such. So nice little tip back on that one. And he said that the fact that this was, and again, nice pull in this, because I completely forgot that they did this film a couple of years after Space Jam. And for those of you who have a place near and dear in your hearts for Space Jam, fine. Yeah, we know. they decided they were going to continue to capitalize on cinematic releases of Looney Tunes cartoons and do something called Looney Tunes Back in Action, which was, I forget what year they released the thing.
Is that the Brendan Fraser one?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. But there was a scene there where they start having to square off against a bunch of aliens of various types, some recognizable and some not. But there was a Dalek there in front of them. So they've got all of these things coming at him, and there's a Dalek with his head spinning around and lights going and screaming exterminate as he's coming at Brendan Fraser and whoever his female was. I can't even remember at this point. So, but the fact that some of these people at Warner Brothers had this affinity or this love for Doctor Who that goes back, they've got that thing, which was the early 2000s or maybe late 90s, but this Tiny Toon Adventures reference goes back 13 years before that. So now we're talking late 80s or so, maybe, I want to say late 80s. So that's, and the fact that this is happening during the Dark Years, because I think the Back in Action movie was 96, I think. Someone check my...
I guess that would be about right. Because I know it was after Space Jam. Space Jam was 90... It might have been a little later than that. Okay. But yeah.
Yeah. So that's just people holding a torch for the show during the bleakest periods. So nicely done on that one. So yeah, I mean, there are loads of references out there, and they continue to grow. And I'm certain that as Geek Chic... And con friendliness and sort of the inclusionary nature of a lot of the geek culture just continues to solidify itself in our modern standards as far as network television and those things. It's going to continue. I know there was even like a Saturday Night Live episode a couple of years back, a sketch with Paris Hilton. So it must have been at least a couple of years back because she's not a thing anymore, right? Hopefully,
right?
She's not a thing.
Okay, I don't think she's a thing anymore.
Where she was doing like a dating site for nerds. And to prove that she had nerd cred, she put on like a Baker hat and scarf kind of thing. And she was there in front of like a call center where all the people on phones behind her were dressed as like stormtroopers and such. So it was just, but that was their aspect of saying we're nerd friendly. So there you go. It's just, I have no idea what's next. But I like the fact that when these things happen, more and more people are catching them. Or at least that there are aspects of the mechanics of the show that are being used, like Bill and Ted's, that are just being used more and more often.
Yep.
So as far as, this actually is not a bad segue into our news for this evening, of which there's quite a bit, so brace yourself, but we're going to do this in incrementing interest order. Ready to go to the news?
Yes, let's go.
Okay. First point here. Talk about crossing over. This was probably not intentional from Mr. LeBeau or Mr. LeBouf.
LeBouf.
LeBouf. he's been all over the news often for lots of things. Inspirational
good things.
I'll do it. His inspirational videos where he's speaking to college grads in ways that college grads should not be spoken to. But Shia has been captured lovingly by a series of oil paintings where he represents all 13. That's right, 13, because you can get the war doctor, which may arguably be the best looking Shia LaBeouf of the bunch.
Yeah, the ninth doctor, not looking so good.
No.
Looks like a mugshot.
It does look like a mugshot. He's kind of washed out and pasty, although he does pull off a decent Matt Smith.
Yeah, and his Capaldi is not terrible.
No, that's true. Although that mustache is creepy.
Well, yeah, but that's probably just the LaBeoufness of it.
Yeah, LaBeouf stashes are kind of scary. I'm trying to look at his Hartnell doctor, and it's reminding me of something else. Maybe just that I'm picturing someone else in that expression. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I think he should have gone clean shaven at least for his Troughton doctor. I'm not really getting the scruffiness as he's standing there with his recorder and his 500 year diary. But regardless, for those of you who want to capture these things, you can get the individual paintings. You could even get the entire set of them for 425 measly American dollars and put them all around your house to stare at people as they walk up and down your hallway.
To deter thieves.
All right. Next item in our news. Where do we want to jump to next? Well, this, I'm going to put this in here because I'm not really sure of the validity. There's some question as to whether or not there is a very short little teaser out there of a couple of seconds of the of a close up of a Lego representation of Peter Capaldi. Well, but here's the thing: it's not released by Lego. It's released by a group called Groove Bricks, and they sort of represent. Well, as far as their description, they are a TV network, a YouTube network that designate themselves as your one-stop source for Lego-related content and the latest news from the Lego world. So this doesn't really have Lego's stamp of approval on it. So
but we did know that we were supposed to start getting Doctor Who Lego figures this year, didn't we?
Yes, and the inclusion of Lego characters in their Dimensions game for various gaming platforms. So, I don't know. I just remember that there were some folks within our Whovian podcast circle that have called this into question and still don't know if they're putting any stock in it. So go ahead and take a look at it. See what you think. Do a little background research and get back to us. Let us know whether this is actually legit or not. See if you have any backing stories to support this, because it's really brief. I mean, it's a matter of seconds. But it's, again, it kind of goes along with the, well, that's a teaser that tells me absolutely nothing.
Yes.
Kind of what teasers were, but regardless. Here's another interesting crossover. Haley, take this one because I get a kick out of this.
Not just Legos. Minions also in the TARDIS now.
The one show, Radio 1 station program hosted by a DJ by the name of Greg James, decides that he's got an opportunity, to run through some of the various TARDIS interior sets that they have available for open tours, and taking a moment to do some quick filming with it. They decide that they are going to use this as a point to also promote the upcoming release. When is the date of the release of the Minions film? I don't even know. Is it this weekend? Next weekend?
I have no idea. I know this summer, and that's as dialed in as I am on that one.
Okay. All right. I think it may be...
Coming out this weekend.
This weekend.
Right in the article.
So as we record it. Okay, so there you go. So for those of you who have seen it, let us know. So, but they get the opportunity. While the video clip is kind of cute, you can kind of kitschy and so forth, you kind of get it. It's amusing. But the fact that they bounce around through a couple of different set locations, so to the one point where they get back actually to the first Doctor's console room and the whole scene goes into black and white. So that's well done. And the round things. I love the round.
They should have gone into stills with audio over it.
Oh, no, like a reconstruction. Oh, that'd be brutal. I can't imagine. But yes, apparently the minions also get the opportunity to visit the set of Coronation Street, Blue Peter, obviously for the kids. You got to connect for the kids, for that matter, and a couple of other BBC News programs within Neo. So get a chance to play around with that too. It just for open fun. And please take it with a grain of salt. I know a lot of people are kind of bashing up on it because, you know, they say Greg James is a horrible actor. He's not an actor. He's a DJ. He's a radio personality. Leave the poor guy alone. take it with an open mind. Leading up to our last couple items here, this is a long time coming, I think. I think it deserves a little more attention than I think a lot of the media had given it. For those of you who do subscribe to Doctor Who magazine and gotten a chance to pick up issue 488 that just dropped in the past week.
They've been listening to the cast. They know what we want.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a feeling they've been tuning this in pretty closely because they've gotten a chance to sit down with Stephen Moffat and talk to him about the vitriol that has been thrown at him since he stepped out of the writer's room and into the producer's box. He actually makes a very good reference here in sort of paralleling the animosity that tends to be thrown towards his role and tying it all the way back to John Nathan Turner, obviously, you know, as one of the last executive producer and principal, I guess, before the showrunner was really referred to as such, but the creative director of Who right before the Dark Years. So, you know, saying that he understands the fact that a certain faction of the fans were waging ineffectual campaigns against him. Russell T. Davies, he admits, had a small bit of that, and so do I. So what? Pick up an online newspaper, go down to the comments section, read the ranting horrors there, and it will turn your hair white. Who are these people? I don't know. I don't care. So it's an interesting kind of response. Did you get a chance to read through this?
Yes, this one I did get a chance to read.
Okay, what's your take?
I guess he's learned what we've all learned, which is don't read the comments on the internet. Yeah, you know, Kira and I have a tiny platform to get ourselves out there. And I know we've both probably had negative feedback.
We have.
And you got to roll with it. And he says that, but he's like, you know, every once in a while, it does hurt.
I love the fact that Neil Gaiman came to his defense. You know, apparently, you know, all of this stuff can kind of rattle you, can kind of get to you. Neil Gaiman, I guess, had written him at one point and said, you know what, look at it this way. They love your content so much that they take ownership of it. And it's like watching, you know, it's like the equivalent of going to a park and starting to kick someone's child, you know? So, and I understand that because say what you will about Moffat and the directions that he takes with the show or the characters that he introduces to the show that weren't there before. No, you cannot continue to just keep using the preceding decades of aliens and just rehash them or just, you know, say, oh, well, another Dalek invasion. How are we going to deal with it this time? You have to start adding some layers to the program. But if you've got something that you've got people that are so passionate about that they jump all over you and nitpick your material, then they're paying close attention right to your material.
And so people now have, you know, a way of conveying their feelings more so than they did in the 70s and 80s when the show was being made.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it took a lot more effort. You could write a letter to the studio and hope it found its way into the showrunner's hands or something like that. Now you just go on the internet and write a blog post, mm-hmm, and they might stumble across it or tweet it or whatever.
Speaking of those letters, if you ever get an opportunity, if you don't want to pick up a copy for yourself, run down to your local library and find the compendium they put together during the 50th anniversary year called the Doctor Who Vault, which is just a kind of a walk through some of the historical memorabilia attached to the front of the show. And in there, in a lot of intervals along the way, are letters from the fan base. Like, they'll put, you know, reprints of the letters there, either from the fan base or from BBC executives back to the producers and things, talking about, nah, didn't like this, I don't know where you're headed with this one, or the bashing on Hartnell and things like that about his edginess or spikiness and such sound familiar to what they were saying about Capaldi just in the last couple of years. But it's great to see. And just as your point was, if they had those avenues for instant feedback that we have right now, live tweeting our every thought and emotional reaction to every second that we see aired, all of this has happened before and will happen again. It's just the nature of it. So, yeah, you have to be kind of thick-skinned about it as a showrunner, I'm sure, or anyone who is putting their name on the creative team. He just happens to be the one in the largest chair. His name happens to be one of the last ones fed in the credits, so he's going to be at the receiving end. I don't know. That's one of the reasons why I think you have to give writers ample opportunity, you know, when they get reinvited. You know, Jay will say what he will about, you know, some of the episodes that he's not a particular fan of, or I'll say, you know, some episodes where I'll say, ah, you know what, I really didn't, that one just didn't quite jive with, I'm thinking Jay, particularly Mark Gatiss, which I'm going to defend Mr. Gatiss to the nines, but that's a war between Jay and I. But giving the opportunities to redeem themselves in other episodes or just scenes within the same episode where you say, okay, yeah, on the whole, this wasn't mine, but that scene really nailed it because that's your strong suit, or that's what you can do. We're possessive, we're passionate about this because this is something that we dive into so deeply and we want the best for it. So, God, it's almost as if we did an episode talking about this entire thing before.
Funny that.
Well, last item on here, I gotta take a minute because this is a lot to absorb.
They listened to me in particular when they were listening to old episodes of GPR.
Is that it? Is that it?
That's what it is. They heard the tag, yeah. And they took it to heart. More River.
It's always Haley's sign-off. More River song, God damn it.
And they listened.
Yeah. So Big Finish, over the last week, the Big Finish audio production team had been hinting about... June 26th, that was their big thing. Like, or no, sorry, 27th, you know, hold out for BF27. What is it going to be? And they kept giving little hints, you know, things written in the sand, literally tweets of all these pictures and stuff. And what was it going to be? Had a hashtag going for a little while. And then finally, Greenwich Mean Time or British Summer Time, whatever it is, whatever time zone they're on at the moment. First thing in the morning that day, Saturday morning, they tweet a picture of Alex Kingston, you know, shushing, you know, that she's involved with multiple releases that are going to be coming down the pipe from Big Finish in their radio dramas to come. All over the place. Her involvement with Churchill, which I can't even imagine. I mean, think about some of the oddity of that period, right around the Let's Kill Hitler episode, you know, and the things going on around there, and the World War II Daleks involved. So get ourselves all back into that time period again. This won't even involve the Doctor. This is just River and Churchill kind of running the show in that particular series. You've got her then appearing, and this is the one that I didn't know how to wrap my head around it at the time. Now I think I have a little better understanding. There is the progression beyond the Eighth Doctor adventures through the Dark Eyes series. Now they're into what they're kind of referring to the Doom Coalition, which is kind of the Doctor traveling with her, his newest companion for Livchenka, and now apparently somehow there is a cross where River Song is aware of the Doctor, but she realizes that she can't, because as we know, what was established in Silent Library, she has to help him without him knowing of her existence, because I guess she crosses into his life later in his chronology. Okay. According to Nicholas Briggs, they have this figured out to his satisfaction, and I trust him explicitly for not really mucking around with the chronology of the show. And it's got to be exponentially harder when you're dealing with the reverse chronology of River Song. David Richardson, the producer for this particular project, said that the idea of River meeting previous Doctors was actually posed by Moffat, and it's just an irresistible thing. Alex embraced the idea of returning to the role, so she's going to be in no fewer, you know, two of these box sets coming the following year. So they will round this all out by having her in another series, literally called The Diary of River Song.
Oh my goodness.
Just hand her over. Just give her title role. There you go.
Yeah.
But apparently she will also be joining Paul McGann's Eighth Doctor in that series as well. So I'm not really sure how they're going to handle that one. It's I love the way, with the Big Finish audio, they have considerably more freedom in what they can do within their little encapsulated pockets in the Doctor's timeline, and they go through these great hurdles of covering their tracks later, so that some of the things that you don't think they're supposed to be able to get away with multiple Doctor stories and things of that sort, they clean it up so neatly by the end of it that you can walk away and say, okay, that didn't interfere with the series whatsoever. This is complicated, so I'm really eager to hear, I was going to say see, but be stupid, to hear how they handle this.
In the theater of the mind, you'll see it.
Yeah. So a lot of these are going to carry over into 2016. So it'll be a little while, but she's already into the studio at this point doing some of the readings. So, but you'll also be able to look forward to, you know, Ian McNeice representing Winston Churchill, and Nick Briggs obviously will be doing the voices of all of our Daleks, who will definitely be appearing. So can't go wrong. And having Livchenka back in, she's just a phenomenal transition coming out of the Dark Eyes series. If anyone was going to replace Molly O'Sullivan, really glad they had Livchenka. So more to listen to. Start pre-ordering now. Give them all your monies. All of them.
All of them?
All
I don't
of
have
them.
Very many monies.
Well, whatever you got, we'll make more.
Okay.
So, we will finally have Jay back in the studio for next week. Topic TBD. We've been discussing a couple of things as we get a little bit closer. I will be out of the studio for a couple of weeks while I'm in Cardiff. So, hey, listeners over there, I'll be in Cardiff and Glasgow for a couple of weeks. So, if anybody over there in the UK who wants to buy me a drink, I'll tell you what towns I'll be in. And feel free to purchase your local imbibes for me then. But yes, get us out of here, Haley. Wrap us up.
All right. Well, this has been episode 142 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week.
It's all you.
Okay. We're doing things out of order. It's messing me up.
Sorry. Sorry.
This is Haley saying, as always, more river.
Just river placemats, river beer koozies. That's a U.S. thing, sorry. And this is Kier saying, you know, why you got to pre-hate on River? You got these people that are jumping ugly on the thing, going, oh, you put River in the Big Finish audio. You haven't heard a second of it. Give it time. Seriously. I mean, it's Daleks, Kingston, crying out.
Right. I mean, come on. Bye.
Bye. Honestly.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook @facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.
Oh, I gotta move it so it's not right behind the mic stand.
I keep reaching for my drink and... Oh, I'll let Jay clean up and post.
Yeah, he can fix that. It's his f***ing problem. Should have been here.
Oh, I'm visiting family. This is nice. My family showed up here in an RV for 10 days. Wouldn't leave. Like the Griswolds. How's it going, Clark?